Before a producer hits record or before a journalist picks up a pen, someone like you notices something and wants to understand it. Every day, we invite you to keep asking questions like why and who and how. Because NPR begins with questions, not conclusions. And your right to curiosity is a right worth protecting.
Richard Louv is in his 70s, but when he's hiking...
I'm kind of like walking with a two-year-old. It's really stopping and looking at the detail.
He's author of books like Last Child in the Woods and Noticing, which just came out. He's dedicated his career to writing about the natural world, and he has a really unique way of looking at it, even if it's poop. Oh, look at this. This one looks fresh.
This is a... twisted, so it might be mountain lion.
We're looking at scat.
Yeah, you can tell because a mountain lion scat looks looks twisted. That was a big stop for that mountain lion.
They like centered themselves perfectly on the trail for us.
Very, very well done.
I was pretty excited to be hiking with Richard. I'd read his 2005 book, Last Child in the Woods, early in my parenting journey, and it shaped how I wanted to raise my kids. It reminded me to get them outside whenever possible. In the book, Richard coined the term nature deficit disorder. It points to the disconnection of children from nature. He's quick to qualify that it's not a clinical term, but he needed a way to name what he was seeing.
So when it has a name, it's easier to talk about. It's easier to open that conversation.
In the decades since Last Child in the Woods was published, the crisis of nature deficit has only become more urgent. Along with a bleak outlook for nature itself, screen use has crept into nearly every corner of young people's lives. And that has literally, scientifically, changed the way we use our senses. So Richard keeps writing about the importance of connecting with nature at any age and why it's good for our health. He has receipts. He says there are now more than 1,700 studies and counting showing that spending time in nature improves our physical, psychological, and cognitive health.
And they found in every culture, in every country they looked at, they found the same thing, is that people feel better when they go outside.
We'll hike with Richard as he teaches us how and why to notice. In a world increasingly ruled by our screens and the productivity economy, one man wants us to remember our place.
It's certainly not original, that concept. I mean, mindfulness in nature is one way to think of it. It means paying attention. It means stopping. I think the first step is notice you're not noticing.
From KPBS Public Media, this is The Finest, a podcast about the people, art, and movements redefining culture in San Diego. I'm Julia Dixon Evans.
KPBS On Demand is supported by La Jolla Playhouse, presenting The Family Album, a new musical featuring original power pop songs. Mia, a young musician on the verge of success, returns to the home she once left behind. Performances begin July 17th. Tickets at LaJollaPlayhouse.org.
I met Richard and his wife, Kathy, on a mountainside just outside Julian, where they live. By 9 a.m., it's already blisteringly hot. Hello.
How are you?
Good. We met at the Vulcan Mountain Trailhead, flanked by towering carved wooden gates and metal sculptures made by legendary San Diego artist James Hubble.
I love this spot, actually. I'm so glad that you wanted to meet here. These gates are in this mountain.
We're thinking alike. Yeah, it is.
As we set out, the trail meanders through native grasslands, chaparral and sagebrush, and clusters of gnarled oaks. I asked Richard to walk me through what he's noticing.
Well, of course, immediately we're drawn to the edge of the path. This is buckwheat?
This is buckwheat.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And it's all over the place. Look at all that.
When Richard talks about noticing, he doesn't just mean taking a quick glance or simply registering some fact. He means deep noticing.
Deep noticing basically is, complete awareness of where you're at and looking for things in nature and then being mindful about where you are.
Deep noticing may seem tiring, but research shows that it can actually give us energy. The type of focus we use for daily tasks like making decisions or driving in traffic is draining. But being in nature and opening yourself up to be fascinated with everything around you is kind of the opposite. Scientists say it actually recharges our batteries for demanding cognitive tasks. This restorative kind of noticing is what Richard is talking about.
And it's very, very old. I mean, everything we're talking about today, other people have done better. I mean, there are indigenous people still here, Kumeyaay people. They have a culture that goes far back, 10,000 years here, of noticing this piece of the earth. So we have to approach this with a little bit of humility, and certainly I do.
Slowing down outside seems at odds with the productivity economy. We don't have a ton of space to breathe in modern life, much less to wonder. And when we do prioritize rest, we're probably not reaching for our hiking boots. But Richard and countless naturalists before him say the value of paying attention goes far beyond productivity. Noticing in nature is an exercise in imagination and awe.
There's a critical anthropomorphism is a way of perceiving nature that a professor back east uses with his students. And he said, if you're going to study a snake, you need to become a snake. Use your imagination. What's it like to be a snake? Use empathy. You look at something and first you see it through your eyes, and then you look at it again and you try to look at it through their eyes. And then you'll understand that creature more.
The way Richard talks about being outdoors could be mistaken for nostalgia. And a lot of people share that longing for a simpler, idyllic time. My social media feeds are full of 90s kids summer hashtags. That was my childhood, too. Endless, unstructured, and unsupervised time outdoors. But Richard doesn't want to just reduce nature to this relic of the past.
Well, people often talk about going back to nature, and I never use that phrase. I always say going forward to nature. And when you think about it, so much of what is happening right now is about that. It's about, renewable resources and biophilic architecture, using nature to design workplaces and schools and schoolyards. It really does seem to be more in the future now than it did even 20 years ago.
What role do you think that technology is playing on like an individual level?
Well, first, it also makes it harder, of course. I mean, the addiction to social media, which I've already admitted that I like Instagram too much, and constantly looking at our phones and all that. But, I use my phone as my camera, and there are map programs. There are many programs that you can get for your iPhone. The problem is that they do distract us to an extent. My measure of whether they're good apps or not is how long does it take you to look away from your iPhone. But technology has always been with us. When we go out into a fishing rod is technology. Hiking boots are technology. I'm not anti-technology. I don't want the conversation to stop at technology. There's so many other reasons for nature deficit, yeah. Although that plays a big role in it.
A 2023 study found that among young people, a brief walk outside produced greater cognitive benefits than taking the same walk on a treadmill. Researchers saw improvements in neural responses involved in memory, attention, reaction times, and impulse control. Signs that the great outdoors basically injects itself straight into your prefrontal cortex. And the downside of technology isn't just that it keeps us indoors. Scientists now think humans may have 30 or more senses. Beyond sight, touch, or hearing, there are also senses like balance and thermoception, which is our ability to detect temperature. Richard says being outdoors activates far more of those senses, but screens pretty much limit us to two.
What are we doing? We're putting kids in school sitting in front of computer screens, and we do this to ourselves, I do it to myself, sitting in front of computer screens, and basically asking them to push away as many of those 30 or 40 senses as they can. That, to me, is the definition of being less alive. So it's not the taking the machines away that is the issue. The issue is, what are we balancing them with?
Richard spent his childhood in rural Kansas.
When I was a kid, growing up outside the suburbs of Kansas City, I spent a lot of time in the woods and fields. There was a field down below the hedge at the end of our yard, a long, big field surrounded by woods. And there was a little swamp down there, a creek, tiny creek ran through it. It was filled with these big clumps of grass. I don't know what the actual name of the grass was, but I called it lion grass when I was a kid because they looked kind of like lions from the distance. And I would go down there and I would fall back into that grass and look up at the sky and feel like I was floating. It's a great memory.
And when he eventually landed in San Diego, the landscape came as a shock. He remembers standing on the beach in Coronado in 1971, feeling adrift and out of place. So he got in his car in search of something.
I didn't know about Julian. I really didn't know about the mountains. I didn't know about the lakes. And I was really homesick. And I drove east into the mountains and got off of 8 on a dirt road above El Capitan Reservoir. And I drove for miles and miles. And I got out of the car and was in the wind and was looking around. And I saw some lion grass. It looked exactly like what I knew as a kid. So I went to the first clump of lion grass and I fell back into it and felt that feeling of being lifted again.
You don't have to be out deep in the mountains to have an experience like this. Richard insists nature can be found almost anywhere.
There's no doubt that there are areas and neighborhoods where what we consider nature is in very short supply. Doesn't mean it's not there. You know, it's the ants in the crevices of the sidewalks. It's the falcon that lives on a ledge across the road from your building. It's in the alleyway. It's in the cul-de-sac, the clump of trees at the end of the cul-de-sac, that to a small child can be the whole universe.
When we spend so much of our lives in two dimensions, on screens, in apps, through text messages or TV shows, it's easy to forget we live in a physical place. It's easy to forget where we actually are.
There's a term, placefulness. That's not my term, but it describes this having a deep sense of place. you can develop over time. You can ask certain questions about that place. Who lived here before? Are there native plant and animal species, and where are they? Bees. Look at that. They're just everywhere.
This is sage.
These little purple flowers.
Riders of the purple sage?
Yeah, that's what bees do. It's really neat.
There's something whimsical about the way Richard wants us to experience nature. In his new book, he introduces what he calls bioenchantment, and why he thinks humans have always been drawn to fairy tales. He remembers a time right here on Vulcan Mountain during a guided session of forest bathing.
You just go out in the woods and you go with a guide who asks you questions and asks you to do certain things, like go out and find a tree that somehow you relate to and sit beneath it and look at it and wonder about it.
Richard said one woman in the group sat beside a fallen tree. Later, she told him that she'd felt the pain of that tree and also the pain of the trees that had broken its fall.
I think it's a beautiful small story. It's almost like a fairy tale. And often when people came back and told their stories of what they noticed, they often sounded like fairy tales in some fashion. And I wondered, where do fairy tales come from? And I think that's where they started, is just going out and noticing and understanding their stories everywhere.
Richard argues that, in a way, fairy tales were onto something. The way we understand nature is changing on a fundamental, scientific level, not just how nature rewires our human brains, but the bigger picture.
You can't pick up a magazine or a newspaper without seeing some amazing new discovery about how trees communicate, how not only through the mycelium networks underneath a forest, but even through the air, there is a kind of communication that they think they're discovering that plants use. And animals, how much, I call it the great conversation that's all around us. And once you begin to hear that and hear scientists talking about that, you see nature differently. Suddenly those fairy tales make sense. There is something in the forest. The forest is enchanted, but not necessarily in the way we think it is. And the word I coined to describe that is bioenchantment. We feel it.
For Richard, bioenchantment and noticing are good for our imagination, our health, and can also help us make sense of the scientific world. And as Richard argues in Last Child in the Woods, these experiences are invaluable for children as they grow up. And yeah, Richard's writing had a huge influence on me as a parent. Coming up, I call my own son and ask him how I did. Stay with us.
Before a producer hits record or before a journalist picks up a pen, someone like you notices something and wants to understand it. Every day, we invite you to keep asking questions like why and who and how. Because NPR begins with questions, not conclusions. And your right to curiosity is a right worth protecting.
Parenting young children is hard. And parenting with any sort of intention beyond survival can feel impossible. In my experience, my tactics to avoid nature deficit were hit or miss. Some days, it was hard enough for me to keep my head above water until bedtime. But every so often, we would spend all day collecting acorns and counting ants at mission trails, or inventing imaginary worlds with playmates in a canyon. It was intentional to be in nature, but it was also cheap. We couldn't really afford big vacations or the overwhelming lineup of lessons and activities. Sometimes we had to drag the kids outside, whining incessantly on hikes. I was exhausted, anxiety and patience worn to threads. But do I miss those long, tired days cleaning dirt out of tiny pockets? 100 times, yes.
And I mean, like, I also had a very different perspective of it than you did, because, like, I didn't notice all the, like, oh, this is such a hassle, because I was the hassle.
Be the hassle.
That's my son, Ollie, who's 19. When I called him, he was standing at a trailhead in Northern California where he goes to school. My youngest was off the grid, working at a summer camp in the mountains.
Okay, so the question I want to ask you is, do you feel like you had access to the outdoors or that you played outside a lot?
Yes, definitely. It's funny that you are asking me this question, but you remember back, like, we used to go hiking, like, in Mission Trails all the time. Mm-hmm. Up in Mount Laguna and Green Market, we would be out there all the time and going out to the meadows. And when there was all, like, snowed over, you could kind of, like, slide around on the ice a little bit of the little stream. Like, if you look back at, like, our old, like, photo albums and pictures of me and my friends just, like, poking our heads through the trees at, like, a park or something.
I asked Ollie about the games he and his friends and sister invented, especially at one of our favorite playgrounds, Briarcrest Park in La Mesa.
That's where, like, the whole Dottie Dottie Daughter thing started. Me and, it's crazy little reference there. Me and my best friend, Luca, would do this thing where we were walking along this, like, low stone wall, and it was, like, you know, balancing on the edge, and we would just walk along it and sing, like, a stupid little song that we made up. Yeah.
Now that you are basically grown up, much to my chagrin, like, do you feel like your childhood in any way has shaped how you view nature?
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm majoring in ecology and evolutionary biology because I spent so much time as a kid out there, like, in the woods, like, in the dirt, looking at weird little bugs and whatnot. Like, that's what piqued my curiosity of nature and the outdoors. And, like, I wanted to be able to do the things that I saw the scientists, like, at the Natural History Museum doing.
It's not like you have to go all in on nature. Being completely screen-free isn't realistic. I just wanted nature to be a part of my kids' lives. And sure, they still spend plenty of time on their phones.
Are you willing to tell me your screen time average?
Yeah, you want me to check right now?
Let's do a real-time shaming.
Minutes. This week's average is 3:40. 3 hours 40.
It's really no worse than mine. And like Richard says, it's about finding balance with technology and making the most of the time you can get outside. I asked Richard what we can do to get better at noticing. One suggestion he offers is finding what he calls a sit spot.
You find a place and you return to it.
Go somewhere regularly and just sit and wait. Or, he says, go back to your roots, way back.
I think pretend they're a four-year-old. And when you go for a walk, stop as much as a four-year-old does. Drives parents nuts. But if you stop, you'll see something in that grass. You'll see something crawling in the dirt. You'll see a mountain lion scat you wouldn't have seen if you hadn't stopped.
It's not about knowledge or identification. It's not about facts or our adult urge to make everything matter. For that child, a four-year-old on a walk, like my own children once were, it's about discovery and who we become when we notice.
You know, as kids, we noticed, many of us, not all of us, but some of this is rediscovering the joy that you had when you were a kid out in the field or in the woods or climbing a tree, as I did often. And looking at the life in the grooves of the bark, you know, the transparent little spiders or aphids.
If Last Child in the Woods was a warning that if adults didn't act, children's relationships with nature could disappear, then noticing feels like Richard coming full circle. It's a reminder we still have so much to learn from children.
All of that stuff a child takes in much more easily than adults. We're all so busy, you know. They're doing important things. Mm-hmm. But the child really starts out that way, and then we lose that, many of us. But it's not gone. It's still in us. I remember the joy that I felt as a kid. Mm-hmm. I wanted to feel that joy again.
Special thanks to Richard and Kathy Louv for their help with this story. And thank you so much for listening. If this episode resonated with you, please subscribe, leave a rating, or comment. It makes a real difference and helps stories like these reach more people. The Finest is a production of KPBS Public Media. I'm your host, Julia Dixon Evans. Our producer is Anthony Wallace, who also composed the score. This episode was written and researched by me and Anthony. Our audio engineer is Ben Redlask, and our editor is Chrissy Nguyen.
Watch programs on your schedule with the KPBS Plus streaming service. See new episodes of Nature and Nova, latest news from PBS NewsHour and KPBS Evening Edition. Local shows like Ken Kramer's About San Diego. Learn more at kpbs.org/kpbsplus.